Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Mistrial, an inside look at how the criminal justice system works and sometimes doesn't. Written by Mark Garagus and Pat Harris and narrated by Mike Dawson.
Another thing about the Scott Peterson case that has always puzzled us is the widespread, almost unanimous opinion that Scott was guilty before one piece of evidence was introduced. If you examine every high-profile case of the past two decades, O.J., Michael Jackson, Casey Anthony, Robert Blake, the Duke lacrosse team, Dr. Conrad Murray, you'll see that every one of the defendants had some group or constituency that argued on behalf of their innocence. But Scott Peterson didn't. When we took over the case, we soon found out that it was considered an accepted fact that he was guilty.
Mistrial. Available now at iTunes, Audible, and AdamCarolla.com.
Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new amazing app.
This one's a game changer.
There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more.
Plus every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen.
And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more.
So download our one of a kind new app and see for yourself.
Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcastone.com.
This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice but the gun mandate. Get it on. And welcome to Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. Mark Garagus is in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where I went to college and where I watched the big three game last night.
Oh, yeah. I watched it. Let's talk about that, too. Dr. Godsad. Am I saying that right? Did I screw that up?
Godsad.
Godsad. he's been on the show.
What do we call
before.
You for short?
Extremely good looking.
How about Doc?
Doc is good.
The okay, book. Good, Doc. Is the consuming instinct what Juicy Burgers and Ferraris, although I think Ferraris is spelled differently. Oh, probably not. It's apostrophe in there. Pornography and the gift of giving reveal about human nature. I love that. I want to get to that into a second. First, I was watching the big three. Not the big three, but three. What's the show called? Sorry.
Big Three.
Oh, it is a big three.
Yes, big three on Fox Sports.
The reason I screwed up the big three is I did a movie called Windy City Heat, and the stars of that movie was called the big three, and I thought that I just imposed my Windy City Heat. it's a Jimmy Kimmel thing onto you. Yeah, the big three. Very entertaining. I was watching it in Vegas. I don't have it on my cable network at my house, or I have to dial it in or whatever it is, but very compelling stuff.
It is. I mean, you should have seen Philadelphia. I mean, Dr. J was there. Allen Iverson was there. In walks LL Cool J was there. Fat Joe was there. It was obviously Cube was there. It was incredible. It was sold out. The energy in the room was at Wells Fargo Center was unbelievable. I mean, it was amazing to be part of.
It's a really compelling way. It's like basketball.
The way it should be played.
Yeah,
like when we were growing up.
Right.
You can hand check, you can trash talk, and it's unbelievable.
Doc, the book, and you. First, your story, so people know just where you're coming from.
My personal story?
Yeah.
I was born in Lebanon. We're Lebanese Jews. Lived there till I was 11. Civil war broke out. It became precarious to be Jewish in Lebanon, and so we escaped with our heads.
Can I
What year was that, Doc?
End of 75. So we were there for the first year of the Civil War, and then we moved to Montreal.
I believe that almost all hatred is envy and shame in some, you know, sort of mixed up version of envy and shame. And what I'm saying is this, and I'll get back to the Jews in a second, so everyone sit tight. If you say to me, you're short, or you're dumb, or you're ugly, or whatever, I'll just kind of keep moving. If they say you're a bad dad, you need to spend more time with your kids, I'll stop and I'll start getting angry.
Right.
Because it'll trigger something in me. And it's probably a shame. It's probably a part of me that thinks maybe I should spend some more time. Something will strike a chord. You know what I'm saying? So just the general insults, sort of, you're just driving down the freeway of life. Somebody cuts you off. They flip you the bird. That's just one guy cuts you off who flipped you the bird. You're moving on. But when they hit something that's close, that feels shameful, then the rage.
Right.
And I feel like the Jews show up and shame the shit out of everybody because they're family-oriented, they're educated-oriented, they stick together, and they kick ass. And the people who aren't doing so great around the Jews look at the Jews, and now they have a choice. You can either emulate with the Jews, or you can find a mirror, look into it, and figure out what you're doing wrong. Certain amount of shame involved with that. And then emulate what the Jews are doing through a whole bunch of hard work and studying and getting up early and staying late. Or you can go, fuck that, we're blowing them up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but by the way, Jew hatred, going back to Muhammad, is in a sense related to what you're saying, because he walked around saying, look, I'm the final prophet. And there were a lot of Jews in that area at the time, no longer. And the ones who were most resistant to his supposed final prophecy were the Jews, because they had several thousand years of already established monotheism. And so at first he was nice to them, thinking that he would be able to convert them to follow him. And to the extent that they were the ones who were most vociferously against the idea of following him, he turned from being nice to them to being, you know, an endemic Jew hater.
Mark, you have any, does that ring true
well,
to you
like
at
to-
all?
I like to often say, contrary to the public pronouncement, that the Jews are a lost tribe of the Armenians.
Yeah, my wife is Armenian, so we've got both angles covered.
Well, I was going to ask you that, because if you're from Lebanon, the Armenian community there is about as strong, and it was extremely welcoming up until the war. I mean, the war was just unbelievable, because we got hit as well as the Christian community there, although there's still a pretty good sampling of Armenians that are there.
Right. I think right now we're probably in Lebanon, and maybe somebody will correct me if I'm wrong on my demographics, it's probably one-third Christian, two-third Muslim. But until very recently, Lebanon had more Christians than Muslims. The Jews were always very small. Probably the zenith of the community was about 20,000 maybe.
Well, the Jews
You know what I did? We had such an influence on it. I actually opened a restaurant in downtown L.A. that serves Lebanese-Armenian food, because I love the food so much. And they had such a great impact and influence on Armenian food. So I have to take you there, Doc. I wish I was there. I'd take you there for lunch.
Next time or whenever you come back. I'm here for another month, so I'll
be with... Oh, you're here for a month. We're going down to 10E. We'll take Adam as well.
Oh, look forward to it.
Is the... I've never had this thought before, but the Jews, by virtue of what I just said, sort of family, responsibility, focus, education, are always going to be a few down in numbers, because they're not cranking out 15 kids and then moving on to Florida and having four more kids and singing blues. There's no blues singing Jews.
Usually the Jewish and the Armenian women like to limit production to two, especially if they get one of each gender, then they tell you they're out of production.
You know, it's so funny you're saying this, because that's exact. You just described my family reality. We have a boy, we have a girl. I'm keen to have more. My wife said the shop is closed. We're done.
Right, exactly. What? You've got an Armenian wife, right?
Exactly.
So you can never...
That's Paulette. You got a boy, you got a girl, you're done.
Yep. I got a boy and I got a girl and I'm done too.
That's Lynette. Lynette's got a little Jew and Armenian in her too.
I know. Well, you know, the Italians, I always said, the Italians are just sort of dumb, good-looking Jews.
Who eat better?
Hey, hold on for one second, Adam. I've got important news about Alone, back for the fourth season with a crazy new twist. By the way, the rules have changed on this. The 10 survivalists are still dropped into an unforgiving wilderness, but now it's five competing teams, brothers, fathers, and sons, and a married couple. I don't know why they put a married couple on one team, except maybe they wanted to see them fight. Different kind of survival show. Besides their teammate, they're truly alone. No camera crews. They film themselves, kind of like a GoPro thing. No gimmicks, no forced challenges. Teams are split, equipped with five items each. To win, they must find each other and survive on North Vancouver Island for the longest. By the way, $500,000 is at stake. Tune in for all new episodes Thursdays, 10, 9 Central, on history.
So the Jews are always going to be down on numbers. And as long as, you know, I believe if you come to a society like the United States where we value, we have envy, we just don't act on it. And you end up being wildly successful without the, you know, the pesky genocide part creeping in. But these other regions, they don't have as much self-control.
And what's incredible is that Westerners don't appreciate the extent to which Jew hatred is part of every fabric of Middle Eastern society, right? If it rains, damn Jews. If it's sunny, damn Jews. If a squirrel is bothering you, of course, he's a Zionist squirrel. There is no end to the extent to which, and I mean, it sounds facetious, but it really isn't. I mean, I could give you actual examples where animals were accused of being Zionist Jewish pigs. So, for example, a few years ago in Sharm el Sheikh in Egypt, there was an attack, a rare attack by some sharks on some tourists in the Red Sea. Well, the Egyptian media and so on argued that this was planted by the Jews to harm the tourism industry in Egypt. So, I mean, it's just endless.
The thing I'm most interested in is how obsessed we are in this nation. A few months back, there was a lot of anti-Semitic this, and Trump is ushering in this new sense of anti-Semitism and this, that, and the other. None of it ever. I mean, you know, there's dribs and drabs of it. You know, to say it doesn't exist is not true. But to say it doesn't exist reasonably to affect an average Jew's life is accurate. So why don't we move on to bigger pictures? Why do we just sit here with our anti-Semitism at a 0.3 and beat ourselves up constantly when the rest of the world's at a 10?
Well, I would say, by the way, that the Trump phenomenon that you just described wasn't only restricted to Jew stuff. I mean, on my personal Facebook page, every single person who despised Trump would sort of testify to the fact that they are afraid to now go out into the street. So I'm a brown woman who attends the University of Maine, and I'm afraid to now go out into the street because there's going to be, you know, rape detention centers where he rapes all of, you know, I call it collective Munchausen. It's a form of, right?
I love that.
Well, it's the intersection of stupidity and narcissism.
Right.
It's narcissism. It's pure fucking narcissism. It's nothing short. It's pure, uncut, unstepped on narcissism. When you say, I'm great, that's narcissistic. And when you say, I'm number one, that's narcissistic. When you say, I have a target on my back and society's gunning for me, that's more narcissistic. Right. And that's what they're doing.
Right.
And all the parents and the faculty and the entire Democratic Party is just sitting around nodding their head when they should be saying, please, you don't have a target on your back. Go to work. Go to school.
Try to be an academic, which I am. Now, I'm not an American academic. I'm Canadian. So in that sense, I get a bit more charitable leeway because I could always argue that I don't have a dog in the fight. But I've come out very clearly and openly to argue why very reasonable people might have preferred Trump over Hillary. You should see the hate I received. It's simply unbelievable.
Gary, did I send you the article about the law school professor who was suspended because of the questions he asked in his class, and two of the students didn't find or found the questions to be oppressive and sexual harassment, and they actually suspended the professor? And mind you, you're in law school. You're supposed to be learning fact patterns. You're going to have people walk into your office and ask you, you know, here's my personal experience, is this sexual harassment? And the students, two of them complained, and they suspended the guy by virtue of him giving a fact pattern that the student found offensive.
Incredible.
To me, that is the definition of insanity.
Well, also, now, okay. I don't know where to start. I don't blame.
I can hear you winding up.
I don't blame the students any more than I blame the dog that's biting the neighbors. There's an owner. There's an adult. Someone needs to keep that dog in a fenced-in area. It's not the dog's fault. I agree the dog should be put down, But it's not the dog's fault. It's the owner's fault. These kids are 18 and 19. And by the way, not 18 and 19 who stormed the beach of Normandy right. in 1944. This is a 11-year-old version of a 19-year-old. I mean, these are 19-year-old guys who don't know how to drive a stick or couldn't fight, couldn't change a spare tire. I mean, these are not. These are 19-year-olds who've been wearing a helmet since they were born. It started with a corrective helmet, and then they switched to a skateboard helmet, and they never took a helmet off. I mean, these are not a mature group.
Right.
This group of people that were born in, you know, 1998, 1999, they aren't the greatest generation. They weren't the guys who were driving the tractor on the farm at 13 and up before the sun milking the cows or lying about their age to get into the military to fight the Japs in World War II. This ain't them. And now they're making policy. And the faculty, and it's quite honestly, it's the folks that run the asylum. It's on them. Those guys, you know, that president over there at Evergreen University, right. that guy's a willowy wisp of a piece of Melba toast that was soaked in fucking hot buttermilk for a week. I mean, that guy's such a nothing. It's like they're interviewing him and it's like, they kept that guy. Locked him up in his office, and when he said, I need to use the bathroom, they said, hold on, we're not going to let you, or somebody's got to go with you, or whatever it is. Those are your students. Do you think that's right? And it's like, well, that's their prerogative. I can't deny them their prerogative. These guys have been feeding society a never-ending, poisonous ladle full of, if that's their opinion, and that's how they feel, then they're entitled to it, and it is. And the fucking chickens have come home to roost. Because now they're sitting in your office. Those same 19-year-olds who can't be wrong are sitting in your office calling you a racist. And all you can say is you're entitled to your opinion.
Can I offer a
yes.
an explanation for why this is happening? This, by the way, will be the topic of my next book, which I'm currently working on. Tentatively titled Death of the West by a Thousand Cuts. So the idea,
yes.
So the idea is that over the past 40 years, there have been several movements that are perfectly anti-reason and anti-science, right? So postmodernism argues that there are no objective truth. Everything is relative.
Right.
Moral relativism says, who are we to judge the practices of others? Even though they might be grotesque, it's not right for us to judge them. Radical feminism says it is sexist to argue that there are innate sex differences. So from all sorts of different angles, the pursuit of truth is no longer the most laudable ultimate ideal. Rather, it is now the management of one's feelings that is the ultimate currency that we go by at the university. So based on that, if truth is not the ultimate goal that we should be pursuing, rather the management of feelings, then you could understand why all of these things arise. Because if I study something that might hurt someone's feelings, then that should be suppressed because truth is superseded by management of feelings. And so it's a grotesque combination of forces that has led us to the quagmire that we're at now.
Hold on. Don't get your panties in a bunch there, Ace. We've got Tommy John. It's only going to get hotter and more humid. It's the dog days of summer. Get ready for the swampy conditions down in your nether region. By the way, one of our listeners was saying something about they wish they had them for women. Of course, you can wear them. We're kind of unisex, trans. We're kind of trans, Tommy. Old school cotton boxers can't handle the extra sweat this time of year. Put the kibosh on swamp butt for good with Tommy John. Moisture-wicking fabrics. They pull the perspiration right off your body. They dry 4 to 5 times faster. I mean, they dry almost instantly. I take these with me on the road. They've got a patented fabric technology, impossible to get a wedgie. They're wedgie-proof. They're the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Stay cool all summer long with Tommy John. No adjustment needed. Now back to Gary and Ace.
Hurry to TommyJohn.com now and use code ADAM to save 20% on your first order. That's code ADAM at TommyJohn.com for 20% off. TommyJohn.com, use code ADAM.
I want to know what's in it for them. I mean, I grew up on a steady diet of this. I assume most of it, I'm really realizing that there's a lot of this. I see it in my own life. It's an oppositional disorder. Essentially, there's a lot of kids are sort of born this way. Kids are, my theory is that it's just this delayed adolescence that is causing all this. Like, so what I mean is if you said to my if you said to my daughter, you know, you want to get pizza, she'd say, let's get hot dogs. And you said, you want to get hot dogs, she'd say, let's get pizza. Oh. And God forbid her brother wants something. She's just going to go against it. And it's my dog with a rope toy. If my dog grabs a rope toy and I grab the other end, I pull on it. It's pulling north, I'm pulling south. We can turn around and it'll pull my direction. We can go all the way around in circles and we can go counterclockwise. All it's doing is pulling.
Right.
That's all it does. So it doesn't even know, it doesn't want to go a direction. It claims it wants to go a direction. It wants to go the opposite direction you're at, which is the direction society's at. So when I was a kid, and it was the 70s, all my mom's hippie friends were saying, you know, a girl would love to play with a little gun and a boy would love to play with a little dolly, but our society has forced... Now, as a nine-year-old, I knew that was hogwash.
Right.
Because I have this sort of theory, which is, you know, they go, well, why, you know, you say a man and a woman are preferable to raise a child. How do you know it's not a man and a man or a woman and a woman? I go, because that's the way it is. I have an ultimate trump card. It is. It's called, well, why do all the guys get to build the bridges and the ladies are school teachers? Because that's what it is.
Right.
I don't know. You want to argue with what is? That's a pretty tough argument.
It's because so what you're talking about is what's called the empty slate premise of human nature, which is a wrong premise. It basically argues that we're not born with any biological imperatives, and hence there are no innate sex differences. And it's only the vehicles of socialization that then make us who we are. So the reason why boys like to play rough with trucks, it's because of parental socialization. The reason why girls play with little pink dolls is because of the same type of parental socialization. Now, in one of my recent papers, I dismantled this by demonstrating the extraordinary amount of evidence that, for example, proves that there are clear biological bases to toy preferences that transcend all cultures and all times, right?
It goes into monkeys.
It goes, exactly. So you could do studies, exactly. Across species, you'll see the exact same sex-specific preferences.
By the way, I'm no academic, but when the asshole I'm arguing this with goes, wait a minute, I had a distant cousin who was a girl who liked to wear overalls and play with Tonka trucks, I'll go, yes, that was one example one person that has nothing to fucking do with what we're talking
that's
about.
That's a classic cognitive bias, right?
So what does that mean? That's your argument? What if I said to those same people, I know guys smoked for 71 years and never got cancer. What would you say? Oh, good. That's hard science. Good. Everyone grab a cigarette? Or would you go, that's one example. That's not how it works.
Men are taller than women, yet every single WNBA player who's a woman is taller than most men.
Right.
I think it's because people have a cognitive bias where they think that if they identify a singular exemplar, that dismantles the statement that is true at the population level.
But those people don't know they're fucking dumb?
They don't.
They don't know what they sound like when I go, well, you say seatbelts saves lives, but my dad rolled his Jeep into Chappaquiddick and he was thrown clear of the mire. Could have ended up with that secretary down in Davy Jones' locker. So what do you mean?
Right.
You know, like, okay, that's one case.
Right.
That's not the rule. And by the way, these guys just go by that when it comes to climate change or smoking or seatbelts or third-hand smoke or whatever nonsense they're peddling. That's all they go by.
My friend Ahmed is a really nice guy. Therefore, Islam is peaceful. That's the classic example.
Right. Right. What is that? It's the opposite of science.
It's basically the inability to think statistically. It's in a sense, it's a form of narcissism because it basically says – whatever my individual experience is, that's what the state of the world is.
Well, it comes from the I know it because I feel it,
right,
and you can't talk me out of it with all your data and numbers. I had this conversation with my wife and my daughter about a year and a half ago, which is my daughter said she felt some way from what I said. She felt hurt or angry or whatever it is. And I said, well, it wasn't meant that way, so move on. And she said, that's the way I feel. And I said, all right, but that's not how it was meant, so stop feeling that way. And then my wife said, you can't tell her to stop her feelings. I said, yes, I can. Stop it.
Right.
Moving on. And it's like, these are my feelings, and I'm entitled to them. It doesn't make you right.
Right. By the way, it's shocking that you gender your daughter using that appellation. in Canada now. We have gender neutrality. I appeared in front of the Canadian Senate to actually make this, the argument that there is such a thing as male and female. In the 21st century, I spent time appearing in front of the Canadian Senate to make that claim. It's extraordinary.
They must sit around all... Yeah, by the way, somebody just gave birth in Canada, and the birth certificate had just an X in the middle of it. They literally wouldn't... I love it when they get the statement from the mom. They're like, I'm not going to let the government arbitrarily assign a gender to my child. It's not... The government's not assigning. Nature, God, Allah, whoever you pray to, or Mother Nature... That's who assigned it, just like they do in every species.
You're being so biologically reductionist by looking at genitalia to infer biology.
Is Canada in some sort of race with Santa Monica to just...
With Sweden.
Sweden. I got to believe they feel Santa Monica's nipping at their heels, too, to just out-pussify. Like, yeah. Are they just going to start bringing in homeless people with no gender? Like, what's going on? Like, why is Canada... What is this rush? Like, what? I know it's a competition to see who's more open-minded.
Right. So the father of the current prime minister, Justin Trudeau, his father's Pierre Elliott Trudeau, was the architect of the political philosophy of multiculturalism, which is precisely the idea that when you let people in, you should not expect them to assimilate to your values. That would be racist. And so in a sense, what we're seeing now is 40 years of this type of mindset where you bring in massive loads of people and you basically say, who are we to judge honor killings and child brides and cutting off of clitorises? As a matter of fact, Justin Trudeau, before he was prime minister, got very upset that the previous government had referred to these practices as barbaric. He wasn't angry about the practices. He was angry that someone would refer to them as barbaric. So it's a form of naturally lobotomized behavior, right? It's a form of what I call ostrich castrati syndrome, right? Ostrich because, in a sense, the metaphor of you head and thing. And castrati in the sense that you're truly intellectually castrated. You are so afraid of your shadow that you're not willing to even...
Hey, Doc, I'll give you a absolute, since we're nominally a legal show, I'll give you an example in a case I tried last year. Adam's heard this, but there was a supposed transgender woman on Hollywood Boulevard who stabbed one of the guys in a group of four youths who were walking down the street. Two of the youths chase this person down the street, push her to the ground or push it to the ground, and then run away. The transgender makes a complaint. They arrest the two of the young men who pushed the transgender down to the ground. We actually went to trial. They never charged the transgender person for stabbing first. Mind you, all of this is on surveillance tape. In trial, my co-counsel was actually, at the preliminary hearing, I was admonished because I kept calling it an it, and that was somehow violative, and I was ordered to call it a her. And I said, well, it's not a her. It's somebody who cross-dresses. So why do I have to adopt that? And I was admonished for that. In trial in front of the jury, my co-counsel said, when you guys, meaning cross-examining the it, when you guys were there, you were drunk, and we were brought to sidebar, and he was threatened with contempt, with actually going to jail for saying the word you guys, even though this person had never had the surgery, even though this person's birth certificate reflected the fact that he was a male, even though the hospital reflected that this person was a male, but a lawyer was actually in a courtroom in California in year 2016 threatened with contempt for referring to the person as a guy.
Hold on for one second, Ace. Stream the largest, have you done this? Because I've done this. Stream the largest offering of classic series, documentaries, and cutting-edge specials on history. No commercials, get that? No commercials, like this right now. New videos added every week. Series like America, The Story of Us, Modern Marvels, and hundreds, I think it's even more, but hundreds of hours of videos exploring ancient Rome, U.S. presidents, military history. Watch anytime, anywhere on your favorite device. And by the way, as an added bonus, our Reasonable Doubt listeners get an exclusive extended 1 month free trial. Get that? Exclusive extended 1 month free trial. Go to History Vault, HistoryVault.com/reasonable doubt. HistoryVault.com/reasonable doubt. Now back to you, Ace Man.
Incredible. Can I add to that?
Go ahead.
So Harvard University has a LGBTQ. I mean, the number of letters keeps getting added, right?
And when did the Q get added? And I always thought that, Adam, and we've talked about this, haven't we? When we were growing up, queer was
a bad word.
A bad word. When did queer become a good word?
Reclaimed it. They've reclaimed it from the homophobes. That's the point, right? But anyways, so Harvard University, and I actually mentioned this in my Canadian Senate testimony, has now come out with a flyer that basically says that not only your gender identity is whatever you feel you are. So even though I may have male genitalia, if I declare myself to be a woman, I'm a woman. My gender identity is sufficiently fluid that it could change on a daily basis. So Monday I could be male, Tuesday female, Wednesday non-gendered, Thursday non-binary. This is coming out of Harvard University.
Well, again, no one can convince me otherwise. This is all born from angry at daddy. And when you get older and you move out of the house, daddy becomes Uncle Sam, the society. Oh, my God. How long? Let's all enjoy Uncle Sam while we have him, because it's going to be Aunt Sandy real soon. Or maybe it'll be Aunt Caitlin. Or something. We can't. Somebody sitting around in Canada, Santa Monica, and Sweden right now trying to figure out how to get a skirt on Uncle Sam. We kid. But a lot of the stuff we're talking about, you couldn't have made up 10 years ago, 7 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, right?
Right.
Uncle Sam is going to be next.
Right.
But here's what drives me insane.
You'll be Aunt Samantha.
Right. What drives me insane is I'm sitting in traffic, and here's what drives me insane about all this stuff. And I also have another theory. My other theory is, we sit around in Los Angeles. I'm sitting in bumper to bumper traffic. I'm trying to get into KTLA. I'm running late. Of course, it's traffic, and more traffic. It's so debilitating. It's depressing. It hurts the economy. It hurts the environment. It hurts everything. This sitting in traffic, and I'm listening to the radio. And they're telling me that the L.A. City Council has ruled to abolish Columbus Day and replace it with Indigenous Peoples Day.
Right.
Now, first off, who gives a shit times 10,000, number one. Number two, it was all, we got to get rid of the Washington Redskins about 4 years ago. Nonstop, we got to get rid of it. You don't hear about it. See, what they do is they bring stuff up. It's like the school-to-prison pipeline. We got to get rid of it. Okay, it's hot for about 5 weeks, and then you never hear about it again. Now, let me explain. When I'm really interested in something, when it really affects me, when I believe it really has an effect on my bottom line or whatever it is, I don't just get a bunch of momentum with it and then forget about it and move on. Oh, it's been 4 years since Adam has asked his wife to lock the front door. Like, no. If it's important, I'm with it. It's not important because they do a poll of Indigenous people or American Indians, and they say, we don't give a shit what that football team is called. We have real problems,
right,
and we want to focus on that. And so the folks in Santa Monica go, all right, everyone, drop it. Moving on. What's our next scare? What do we have to get to now? Ah, let's get rid of Columbus Day. So my feeling is, A, you're angry at daddy, and the state becomes your dad. These are all pussies that are angry at their dad. Listen, I'm angry at my dad, too, but I just hate one old guy who lives in Altadena. I don't take it out on society. I'm very even-handed that way. So they hate the society, and I do believe what L.A. County does, and many of these jurisdictions do, is you have a horrible climate for business. You have crime. You have a horrible homeless problem. Your city's trashed. There's garbage everywhere. There's barbed wire and garbage and sofas out by the side. L.A. is one of the trashiest cities. I mean, the one good thing about the traffic is you really get to take in all the trash by the side of the freeway. You're driving so slowly, you get to see all the raccoons fucking on old sofas thrown out all over the place. But you're talking about changing Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day, which would suggest to me that you're out of problems.
Right.
You see, if I'm from another culture and you go, what are you working on? You don't hear that out of the Middle East. You know what I mean? They're looking for water. They're looking for to remove landmines from roads. You know, they have real problems. I believe we do this just to pretend like we don't have problems.
Well, and I actually use what you just said when I'm fighting against social justice warriors, because precisely as you said, they manufacture all these, you know, first world problems from Wellesley College. But then when I tell them my personal story, how we escaped Lebanon, how my parents were kidnapped by Fatah and so on, then it kind of puts their faux victimhood into shame, right? And so I often use my personal narrative to try to compel them to stop crying wolf every 2 seconds, because there are many people around the world that truly suffer. And by them engaging in this faux victimhood, they're actually denigrating people who truly suffer.
Well, it's not, to me, it's not so much the denigration, it's the distraction. If you say, hey, we're oppressing black people, we're oppressing Jews, we're oppressing women, we're oppressing gay people here, then we're busy trying to solve a problem that doesn't really tangibly exist here. You know, the oppression of women doesn't exist. We're working on it full time here. We should really be taking not our resources, our time. There's only so much time. There's only so much mental focus you can give to something. What if this same group mobilized and focused on that in parts of the world where they actually had oppression?
Exactly.
Think of the dent we could make in it.
Absolutely. The feminist, there's a I won't even mention her name because I don't want her to get more attention. Do you know who I'm talking about? She's Armenian.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
her.
Yeah. She spends her time doing a content analysis of video games to demonstrate the evil machinations of the patriarchy. And I've tweeted to her. I said, yeah, you know, forget about all those, you know, 5-year-old girls who get female genital mutilation. That's clearly not as important as doing a content analysis of video games, right? But she feels it's too hard to go against Islamic misogyny. You're going to get a lot of hate. You're going to get death threats. But I still want to feel as though I'm a fighter, so I'll take on video games. It's cowardly.
Of course. Right back to narcissism.
Right, exactly.
Which is, I want to be – look, we all have this fundamental issue, which is if you want to go in and fight Mike Tyson, fine, but you're going to get hurt. You could say you're a hero or you had a lot of courage. That's fine. So how do I put on the gloves, get into the ring, and don't get hurt? I know. I'll fight Bill Gates. And so people kind of go, well, that's not Mike Tyson. You go, hey, I got the gloves on. I'm in the ring. I'm broken a sweat. It's more than you're doing. And this way I get to have this sensation,
right,
and some of the accolades without getting my nose broken.
Exactly.
Or
right.
Worse, a bullet. So they want it. Now, I think we are intellectually honest in that we say, I don't need to be called a hero. I don't need people to pat me on the back because I tweeted out some rest in peace to Cecil the Lion, and now everyone can fucking think I'm a hero. It drives me insane. We have a business. We have books. We have other things that give us this sense of purpose and this sense of accomplishment.
Indeed, I'm with you. Did you hear about the comparison between the bikini, since we're talking about this sort of feminist stuff, the bikini versus the burqa, and where Western feminists fall on this divide? Are you?
No,
aware?
I'd love to.
Right,
well,
here
look,
go.
Here's how I know how everything lands. The opposite of common sense.
Very good.
That's all it is. It's easy.
Can you guess what the argument is?
Hold on. Can I tell you something? A sidebar, sure, that's going to make, sure, Garrigus laugh? If you
just thinking, I'm here in Philadelphia. I went to school at Haverford. Haverford's sister school is Bryn Mawr. When I was at Bryn Mawr in the 70s, everything you guys are talking about, I mean, because Bryn Mawr was kind of the birthplace of radical feminism, and it was obvious where this was headed. Once you saw that, I mean, it was unbelievable. In fact, we used to say if you wanted to have sex, you had to go over to the Harcum Beauty College because you were never going to do it over at Bryn Mawr. And go Farcum at Harcum, which I'm sure is probably politically incorrect. But when you talk about the opposite of common sense, you would watch these people who would be inculcated with this idea of the radical feminism, and you say to yourself, none of this is tethered to reality.
Right.
Well, you know, it's funny. So when you say, like, you know, here's where the feminists came down on this, I know it's simply all you have to do is think of the opposite of common sense. Not only common sense, horse sense and nature, too, and then you'll arrive at your answer. I'm this way with betting on the Super Bowl. I was wrong so often on my bets that one day my phone rang, and it was Jimmy Kimmel, and it was about 3 days before the Super Bowl, and he said, who do you like in the Super Bowl? And I said, I'm not betting. I lose too much. And he said, well, you need to pick a team. And I said, yeah, I'm not picking a team because all I do is lose. And he said, you should pick a team. And I said, I'm not, because all I do is lose. And then I heard a third voice come on, which is his bookie cousin. And he came on. He said, hey, pick a team. I said, why is it so important you and I pick a team? And they said, so we can pick a team. So, you know, I took the Patriots and they lost to the Giants and they all made money. So
right.
That's how I know.
Adam's the contrarian. You're the contrary. There's a whole theory about that in the stock market as well. Certain indicators are contrarian.
Yeah. Should I buy Apple stocks, Adam?
I'm the cooler. Yeah, I'll tell you. I'm buying stocks in Tandy.
Hold your horses there. My friend, Leah Remini, Scientology in the Aftermath on A&E, Emmy-nominated groundbreaking documentary series, Leah Remini. I just spoke to her. Scientology in the Aftermath returns for season 2 on August 15th. 10 all-new episodes. Leah and high-level former Scientology executives and members delve into their shocking stories of abuse, harassment, and heartbreak. This season, by the way, Leah is going to continue her quest to give a voice to victims of the Church of Scientology, helping people take action. She turns survivors into fighters. She reveals truth. She seeks justice, kind of what we do for a living. So watch first. If you haven't watched the first season, watch it online, on demand. And also, I think you can get it on the A&E app because it really is a phenomenal series. And Leah is just she's one of my heroes. Anyway, back to Gary, back to Adam.
So, right. You want to take a shot with the burqa and bikini?
The burqa and the bikini. Well, first off, they love doing the equivalent. You know, what's the difference between circumcising a young Jewish boy and female genital mutilation? Right. It's all the same. Everything's the same. So you're doing it. It's the same. We're doing it. We're past judging.
It's more diabolical. You haven't put on your radical feminism hat enough today. here's the argument. The male gaze is a form of rape.
The male gaze.
Right.
Okay. Looking at a woman.
Looking at a woman. You're visually raping her.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent that the bikini promotes that type of visual rape, it is oppressive. It is part of the patriarchal standards of beauty, blah, blah, blah. On the other hand, to the extent that the burqa fully hides the woman from this form of rape, the burqa becomes liberating and the bikini becomes oppressive. Now, this is not just one quack, you know, woman who's on acid who's saying this. This is pretty much the standard radical feminist point of view. So imagine how much your moral and logical compass must be broken for you to actually espouse such a position, right? The idea that women could be hidden under a tent and lose all of their identities, radical Western feminists think that's a good thing. So imagine how much of the plot and the narrative they must have lost at this point.
Oh, they've lost it completely. And again, they can work into the wee hours of night trying to twist, you know, sort of technicalities. What they don't realize is Mark Gergis works in a court of law, and we could have videotape of one of his clients performing the crime. Not that anyone's ever guilty that Mark defends, but we could have videotape of that. And what would happen is the tape could get leaked out, the jury could see it, and then Mark could say, this is a mistrial because this tape was supposed to be under lock and key, and now the jury's got it. And his client could get off on a technicality, even though we had film of that client committing the crime. They think they can do this with society. They think somehow they can win the case, even though we all know that's not what happened. But somehow you've been able to twist the words around to the point where we go, oh, touche. I feel. Let me tell you something. That's never going to work. It would work in the courtroom with Mark because Mark could get a victory for his client and we could still have videotape his client performing a crime. They think they can do that. They can't.
What do you think of this analogy, Mark?
Well, I like to always turn it on its head. Look at what prosecutors do. Prosecutors do motions to exclude evidence. In fact, my daughter and Ben Brofman are trying a case with PharmaBro right now. It's, I think, entering, what is it, Adam? It's got to be the third or fourth week they've been in trial in New York.
That's the guy who invented a pill that gives you AIDS, yeah. And he wanted to make it mandatory that all special needs kids take it before their 11th birthday.
I think that guy, that hypothetical guy, would probably have less resentment than PharmaBro.
He's less popular
and in this case, the prosecution actually did a motion, and initially it was granted that the defense could not mention that nobody lost money and that, in fact, everybody had made money. There was no victim. There was nobody who had a loss, and they didn't want the jury to hear that. I mean, that shows you that's the same thing that's going on here.
Martin Shkreli.
Yep.
I think it's so Gary says. I'm not that smart.
Gary's
but so
smart.
What I'm saying is look, in trial, both directions, it works. If you're trying to convince me 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that AIDS is an equal opportunity killer, that you're just as likely to get it as a heterosexual as you are if you're gay, you can try. It's not going to work.
Right.
Because we have reality on our side. And you can tell me that 53,000 Americans die of secondhand smoke every year, and secondhand smoke is a first-rate killer. You can try. It's not going to work. Now, maybe if we're in a court for a few days, you could get a victory. But it won't work because it can't work because we're alive, we're lucid, we're living, and we're walking around, and we've never heard of a human being who's died of secondhand smoke. So you can try. It's not going to work. You can try with the burqa and the bikini. It'll never work.
By the way, speaking of your AIDS example, there was a book that I read probably 20 years ago. I think it was called The Myth of Heterosexual AIDS. It was Michael Fumento, or I can't remember his name exactly.
Right. I think that's exactly who wrote it.
Exactly. Yeah. And he was actually arguing exactly what you're saying. He looked at epidemiological data and demonstrated that in the context of North America, the likelihood of you getting AIDS through heterosexual sex was very small. In certain other regions, in Africa and so on, there was a greater preponderance of heterosexual AIDS. And the amount of flack that this guy got simply for reporting epidemiological data was extraordinary. So again, if the truth, if science, if data hurts someone's narrative, then you should suppress it. That's the current argument.
Well, the narrative is we're academics, we're educated, they're dumb. And sure, 8 people die a year of secondhand smoke, but 8 people's not going to scare anybody. So what we need to do is we need to make up a number. It's lying, like you lie to your kids about the tooth fairy or the boogeyman or Santa Claus or the elf on the shelf. It's for their own good. Right. It's for their own good. We'll lie to them about AIDS. It's for their own good. We'll lie to them about secondhand smoke. It's for their own good. And now we'll just lie to them about everything. It's somehow for their own good. It's a combination of I get to feel like a hero, and the poor people who work, you know, especially the ones with their hands, they don't know. This is good for them.
Doc, you know, which leads me to, speaking of which, the raging debate about climate change and whether it's man-made or not. Do you have an opinion?
So I'm not very familiar with the actual scientific data, but here's what I would say, that the extent to which politicians are offering solutions to try to combat it seems a bit suspect to me, right? So, I mean, if you're spending over the next 60 years, I'm making up numbers here. I don't know what they are exactly, but you're going to spend, you know, $25 trillion over the next 70 years so that you could reduce the warming of the earth by 0.02 degrees. Look, economics is about trade-offs, right? So in a perfect world, if we have infinite amount of resources, infinite amount of time, then that intervention might be relevant. But it seems to me that there's a lot of scaremongering, to go to Adam's point, that basically suggests that the trade-off that the climate change sort of activists are offering is maybe not a good one. It's not an optimal one. So that's the extent to which I'm able to weigh in on it, because I haven't frankly followed the scientific debate on the matter.
What about the argument when they line up, because there's considerable force, I think, when you line up 97% of the scientists, or you get a letter signed by, you know, the premier scientists in the world. Does that carry weight with you?
It doesn't, in the sense that, you know, science is not sort of a democratic process in the sense of, you know, you poll people. I would like to see some meta-analysis that simply shows that, look, it is, there's overwhelming evidence, and then I will buy it. But I simply haven't. In other words, we don't typically decide that my position is veridical and yours is not by polling scientists to decide, you know, which side is more right.
Except in the courtroom, where it becomes what's generally accepted in the scientific community.
Fair enough.
That, right, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Which I've always, you know, whether it's mitochondrial DNA or the GPS, you know, the positioning or things of that nature, I've always found that kind of funny, because that it's as if the law says, okay, we're going to let you just vote on it. And
right.
Once it becomes accepted in the scientific community, then we're going to allow it into a courtroom as gospel.
But by the way, the reason why I don't like sort of the polling aspect, let's see how many agree and disagree, is because some of the biggest scientific breakthroughs have typically come from radical thinkers who, when they first proposed their idea, they were perfectly not in step with the orthodoxy, right?
And so every one of those movies that Hollywood loves, where there's one rogue scientist, you know, Jeff Goldblum is the one guy, the community
right.
is saying the Ice Age is not coming for a billion years, that he's the one guy who's right. worked it out. So if we used HuffPo's logic, we'd all be with the community right. so, and not with Jeff Goldblum, the hero of the character, which is always the theme of those Hollywood disaster climate movies.
And to give an example from my scientific research, I mean, I'm an evolutionary behavioral scientist, right? I apply evolutionary theory to study the evolution of the human mind. Well, Darwin himself sat on his book for many years, refusing to, you know, afraid. He was tepid to release it because he knew that he would be a voice in the wilderness. And it's only when Alfred Wallace, another naturalist, sent him a letter where he was pretty much demonstrating natural selection, that sort of compelled Darwin.
That compelled him to release it.
To release
exactly,
it.
Because it was almost like, hold on here, you're not getting out ahead of me.
Exactly. So again, I don't think that we should be polling people to decide which side is right, at least not in science.
All right. A very good note to end on. I will tell you a couple things. There's a podcasting masterclass. That's me, Irvine Improv. That's August 5th. That's all day. So come on out and get a peek behind the curtain. You can go to Corolla Drinks. We got a new event coming up on July 29th, South Bay Customs in El Segundo. Just go to adamcarolla.com for any of the merch or any of the live dates or any of that. The doctor has the book, The Consuming Instinct, What Juicy Burgers, Ferraris, Pornography, and the Gift of Giving Reveal About Human Nature. Mark, what do you got?
The big three, Chicago this weekend, coming to L.A. in August to Staples. Got Capri, Southampton. We've got Gary's favorite new hotel, Casa Tropicana in San Clemente, V Palm Springs, Tenny Restaurant, where the Doc and I are going to go to lunch and drag
nice.
You, Adam, for a little Lebanese-Armenian cuisine. That's kind of like your marriage. So Lebanese-Armenian cuisine.
I'm denying the Holocaust the entire time, but go ahead.
And
I always say, if you deny a Holocaust,
if you're in the Grand Central Station, stop by Provo.
Denying a Holocaust is like denying you snore. Like if somebody right. wakes you up and said you were snoring, you go, no, I wasn't.
It's
like,
no, I wasn't, right?
I want to know how many societies have been accused of a Holocaust that had nothing to do with a Holocaust. I don't think it's a lot. But how many people have been woken up in the middle of the night and their wife said you're snoring and you went, no, I'm not.
My wife every night.
I know. I love that excuse. All right. The sad truth. It's the podcast, SAAD Truth, Dr. Gadsad.
Thank you so much for having me.
Either way, a brilliant mind. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla for the doctor and Mark Gerga saying mahalo.
Nice meeting you, Mark.
Nice meeting you. Bye, Doc.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.